You're listening to Grove Street Journal.
Enjoy the show.
And here we are. Ali, thanks for joining me today.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that it's raining outside, if I'm honest.
Really?
Yeah. What? I love this time in Vancouver.
What's going on with that?
Because I have a crazy thing about me being a psychopath and absolutely loving the rain. So this is... I'm quite happy with the clouds settled and the fog and the 1 hour drive back and forth.
Yeah.
The rain actually makes it pretty nice.
I mean, the only way I can say if you love the rain and you're a psychopath, do you specifically love it because it inconveniences other people? Like,
I've never thought about it that way. I actually love rain because of my favorite author and like one page of my favorite book, and he describes the rain. And after reading that, I was like, I want to live in the rain for the rest of my life.
I want to live in the rain.
Yeah, and like, especially because I love driving, but not on nice days, because then you feel like you're taking away, like, oh, I should be out there doing something. I don't feel obligated to have to go and do a bunch of stuff, which is why I'm like, I'm pretty comfy inside right now.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I can feel that for sure. I can get behind that even. I you know, if you have the luxury of being able to stay indoors, the rain is perfect for that.
Yeah.
And I always just think, I always have like a picture of like a crackling fire in my head and just like blankets and just cozying up, smoking some weed, reading a book.
That's or Netflix, like anything related, and it's soup season.
Nice.
So there's just all of those wonderful things that
the only together. Problem is I have two dogs and they do not accept rain as a valid excuse not to get their two walks a day.
That is fair. And then it's like the whole drying process.
That is the worst thing, because they're also very spoiled. They not only do they have the two walks, but then in the evening, when we're settled down to watch TV or whatever in the living room, you know, they just stand by the door and they're like, let us out. And you have to let them out, and then they play in the yard. They get super muddy and wet. You have to clean them every time you come in.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. You know?
I could see how that's like, you would be like, oh, it's because it inconvenienced other people, but I don't have a dog, so if that's true. But I did get stuck in the rain, like, gosh, it was probably like 2-3 weeks ago. Another great quality that I have is we have a cat carrier, like a stroller, that we zip our children into, our fur babies, and we take them for a walk. And
brilliant.
I got stuck in the rain with my two cats. We were like 15 minutes from the house, so I had to like derobe myself and walk in like only a sweater in pouring rain and like cover them up.
Oh my god. So was it like, it was so torrential that it was like flooding and just
no,
like...
No, it wasn't. It was probably about today, but I mean, it's still cats.
It can
rain.
Really belt it out here.
Yeah.
Like when it wants to rain, I don't think I've seen rain like this anywhere else.
Really?
It's like a freaking monsoon rolling in.
Even from being from like the UK and Europe, because
yeah,
like, you
no,
guys
like,
have...
I don't know, like, I feel like we do have a similar level of rain, but... What I'd say is my wild hypothesis is that it probably rains more frequently in the UK, but it's more like drizzle. Drizzle is
like
a very English
mist.
Thing. It's like, oh, it's a bit drizzly. But here, yeah, or like a mist. But here, you know, you go through like those periods of like 4 or 5 days of just intense rain. And you're like, I don't remember if there is a different... state of weather from this, or whether it was just always this way.
Totally. And like, we just moved from not too far from here, maybe like 15 minutes west, and now we live like an hour into the valley, into Fraser Valley. And so that change, we didn't think that the weather was going to be that different. Maybe we get more snow. It's completely different because we're stuck so close to the mountains, but also like half in the valley. So we have this small pocket where things just like to chill out for a little bit extra long. Mm-hmm. And literally every day when I walk out of my house and I get in the car and I start driving, it is one thing on one side and one thing on the other. And it's so weird because things won't pass over the mountains.
That's crazy.
And they won't pass through to the other side of them. So we get stuck with, I mean, it was gorgeous out yesterday morning. And it's like, oh, I can go to the river, I can hang out, bring my chair, smoke a doobie. Like an hour or two passes and it was just black.
I don't know.
It's like, didn't even see it coming.
A little microclimate going on.
Yeah.
It's actually the same thing. I lived in Fernie for a little bit. And We used to go camping at Lake Kukunusa, and you drive out of Fernie, and there's this one little bit where you go, I think it's like a small tunnel, but it's like drilled through a mountain essentially, and it's such a small tunnel, it's, I don't know, like 25-30 feet, you're through it, and it can be literally raining, like storm, awful in Fernie, and you get through that tunnel, and it's blue sky and sun. And it's so trippy, but it's awesome. You want it that way because that's where you're going camping. So it's always like, okay, I don't know if this is a good idea. Like, fingers crossed for the tunnel. Yeah. Blue sky.
We've done that because we're like 20 minutes from Stave Lake, and it's gorgeous being in that position where if we wanted to come into the city, it's actually a longer drive than going into the mountains, which is why we moved. And there's been times where it has been just pouring, just dumping rain, and we just don't care. We're like, cool, good thing we have the truck. This is gonna make for some really sketchy off-roading. But it makes it for a really good time, and like, we set up the tents and what are they called, tarps, and we set all of those up with like a fire, and then you do shrooms in the rain, and that is like bliss for me. I just sit there and I'm so happy, and I don't even care if I'm under a tarp or not at that point, just because it's refreshing. And when people are like, oh, you know, you can like smell the rain, or oh, it just rained, like that shit, oh, it gets me every time right there.
Yeah, I love that. I'm that guy. I'm like, guys, it's gonna rain in about 10 minutes. Like, did you feel that temperature drop? Yeah. Temperature just 10 minutes, mark my words. I love that shit.
It's nice.
It's almost like a perspective. Like, if you just want to resist the rain, then it'll be shitty. But if you just embrace it, I'm more thinking like, okay, well, I've got to go take the dog for a walk, and I'm looking outside, and it's pretty miserable. And I'm like, fuck, I'm just going to put my rain jacket on. Like, I'm not going to get wet.
Yeah.
And even if I do, sometimes I'd be in the woods, just put my hood down and just get wet. And it's just epic. It just feels so nice.
Yeah, and there's something about it. Like, my biggest thing, especially because we've gone on so many family vacations the last couple of years, the moment that it rains and I'm near a body of water that I can jump into, that is my favorite thing in the world.
Nice.
And, like, we've been in the middle of fucking nowhere in Thailand on a boat in the middle of, like, massive bodies of water, and it started to just drizzle, and even my mother-in-law was like, stop the boat. She's got to do a thing. And I get so excited. And it's, I don't know. It's, I love being around water. Should have been a Pisces apparently, but I do really just enjoy it. And it's,
do you like to swim as like a recreational thing as well?
No.
Nope. Just like a dip in and out.
Well, yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not going to go in there and breaststroke for 45 minutes.
That's me. I'm just like, you know, I'm like a wind up thing. You put me in the water.
No.
Going around until I get out. I just love it.
I just love to float and just to kind of enjoy it. And it's a nice weight off of my back, especially after surgery. So it's just, I don't know, buoyancy is nice to have gravity kind of.
It's a great way off. Of rehabilitation. Because it's like a low impact. It's gentle on your body.
Yeah. And like, some of the first exercises that I really got to do was after everything kind of was healed and I was able to move around in a pool. And I was like, oh my God.
Did you mind me asking about your surgery?
No, you can't.
Okay.
No, of course. Long story short, I'm 6'3" and have always had joint issues. Lots of people didn't believe that, like, I was injured all the time, but they were like, full blown scan showed, you know, needed a full shoulder replacement.
And when you say people didn't believe, are you talking about like people in the medical realm?
No, medical totally. But like, I played volleyball for years. And when you're an athlete who just like continuously is getting hurt and you're like, what is going on with this? And you think, oh, I'm just pushing myself too much. And it's that. I ended up needing like a full reconstruction of my shoulder before I was 20, and fully opted out of that. Ended up getting into cannabis because of it. But my back has always bugged me, especially in my lower back. It's all the bending and all the, even standing at a sink doing the dishes. If you're tall and that counter is not the right height, that slight pressure that you're putting on your back all the time just wore out my vertebrae. So on my L4, L5, I had a herniated disc, super fun. That was 2019. Just woke up, fell asleep on the couch, and had like a little pinch, and I was like, oh, probably pinched a nerve or whatever. Ended up being, the herniated disc, misplaced nerve. And then I also had bone spurs, which is when you have arthritis and your bones rub together and they start growing back. So they had to go in and pretty much take out those bone spurs, reposition the nerve, and then fix the herniated disc all in between two vertebrae, which was a lot happening when you're, what was I, like 23 at the time? A week before, no, not a week, like a day before, I went to the surgeons to get like the full evaluation, make sure I got my scans, all of that kind of fun shiz, and COVID hit.
Oh no.
And then we literally get the call like after the news broke, they're like, everything's postponed. And it took like another year to get the scans. And then they were like, yep, you're gonna need the surgery if you want it. It's like, yes, I would love that. And then March last year, went, had the surgery. It was about a year and a half, 2 years between the initial waking up on the couch, something isn't right, until I actually got the surgery. And there were points where, like, when people talk about phantom limb, where I would literally stand up and my leg was just gone. Like, no feeling, no nothing. And, like, I had lost something around, like, 70-80% of all of my feeling from the waist down on my right side. So I had no clue that some of the things that ended up coming back, thank God. I had no idea that that shouldn't feel like that way, because after such a long period of time, it was just so much pressure and amazing pains and feelings and whatnot. So, like, you couldn't drive. Like, couldn't drive for 2 years, which was...
That's huge.
Yeah.
It's like in Canada, that's huge. I really rely on a car around here to get around. It's a big bloody place.
Yeah, it was difficult, but after the surgery, there was definitely a lot of progress that happened, and blessed and highly favored to have refused all opioids and did all cannabis recovery instead, had that approved by every surgeon and anybody medically involved, like...
Brilliant.
Massage therapists, physios, nurses, family doctor, like everybody.
And has it been effective for pain?
Oh, absolutely. Like, when the surgery that I had, it was a laminectomy and a discectomy. So all of those things I was describing earlier. And when you leave the hospital, you're walking. Like, you get put in a wheelchair, but like I had to stand up and walk myself to the car. And the next day they were like, you have to walk 20 minutes. After spinal surgery. And it was one of those new rehabilitations that you have to like get up and go.
I always think that's a scary thing, because on one side, okay, you want to start rehabilitating it. On another side, I think personally, I'd be feeling, you know, scared and trepidatious of not wanting to fucking go too quick and damage something again. And
that was a big thing, especially me being so fucking impatient with everything that I do. It was definitely a struggle. However, I wasn't zombied out. And that was the biggest thing, is I don't want to feel loopy or not like myself, or if I am doing this stuff, not feel myself enough or present enough to be able to go through that recovery. And so when we opted for cannabis, I was like, that's going to be so much fun. Being like extremely fucking high for the week that I did take off of work, because I worked from home. So I'm going to get bored after surgery anyways. I can work like this. And it just ended up becoming a way better experience. I really got to enjoy my time instead of not being able to. My partner says that I was extremely annoying in his eyes. I thought I was hilarious. I know I was. But it made it that much more enjoyable. And when you have something like a surgery and you want to use cannabis as a recovery method, it works differently in your body. So for probably the 2 days after, I was taking 1,000 milligrams of THC and 1,000 milligrams of CBD. It was a lot.
It's a high dose.
It is. But
I'm sorry, were you like, was that oil, edibles, flour?
Oil, edibles, no inhalation for 10 days. Okay. Because of coughing, possibly, and just oxygenation for my body and a slight break. So I had to work up that tolerance leading up to it. I didn't just roll out 1,000 milligrams a day. It would be horrible on your body if you didn't prep for it and build up that tolerance. But I wasn't in as much pain, but I wasn't high. Even if I did take like a 300 milligram brownie.
That's awesome.
And so it's just where everything's redirected in your body. So it was being all absorbed into my back and not into my brain.
And that's a beautiful thing about cannabis, which I actually discussed with Dr. Ethan Russo on one of the very first podcasts that I did. And why it's so good in this kind of setting is, like you say, you build up a tolerance to the high, which in this case is a side effect. However, the efficiency and the effectiveness in terms of the therapeutic values, that doesn't diminish. Whereas with an opioid-based medicine, you need to continually keep ramping up doses just to achieve the same level of pain reduction.
Yeah, and like eventually when the wound had healed, or incision site had healed, we started doing more topicals, and I got to do the bath bombs more and the things that I knew really, really helped. Because there were days, like I said, like nothing in my leg. Half an hour in the tub with a bath bomb and I'm moving my toes. I'm able to actually put weight on my leg. Like, it was crazy things that we found out what worked and what didn't. But definitely, like, I think it was day 3 or 4. I forgot to put back in my nose rings after surgery. And I was able to actually stand up and kind of shuffle throughout our apartment by myself. It's like, oh, damn, I got to put these back in. And they had regrown just slightly, so you kind of have to pop it on top of, like, the hundreds of milligrams of whatever I had taken that day. It made me so sick. And that was the one downfall, is, like, when you do take a lot of edibles, you can get nauseous. And that, plus the pain I had, plus a nice little adrenaline rush to my body, I was done for.
For
a little bit, yeah.
Tipped you over.
Yeah.
Edibles are I approach them with caution. You know, I've done the very textbook thing. Brownies, too much.
Yeah.
High for like 2 days. And I was just like, I was just on the sofa, like there were 4 of us. And we all just, like, you know, started off innocent enough, put some videos on YouTube, like, but this is pretty strong, actually. And then it's just like waves, and you're like, whoa, it's ramping up. Oh, okay, it just ramped up again, until we're just on the sofa. And to this day, it sounds so fucking stupid, but to this day, one of the hardest things I've ever done is we ordered pizza, and we lived in, like, a complex. And so I had to get out across the courtyard of the complex and then in an elevator down a couple floors, then go and meet the pizza driver. And it was just like, it was so hard, like the mental effort to remove myself from the sofa. And I was like, I've got to, like, these guys need to eat. Like, I've got to do this.
Edibles do, like, I know people usually get this from any kind of consumption of cannabis, but it's that, whoa, I've been sitting here for a really long time. And I don't think I've said anything. Maybe I should say something. That's a neat thought. You're just back to silence.
There's nothing. Yeah. There's no thoughts on, like, in the universe.
That's me when I have too much edibles. My poor, beautiful friends, Marta and Mikey. Hey, guys. They took us out. Where were we? Like, somewhere downtown. We went to the beach and they took us out to, we went for pre-drinks, and then they were like, oh, there's this great fried chicken place, took us out there, and I had taken an edible, and by the time that we hit that fried chicken place, I was just glazed over. And I knew that they were talking and telling really good stories and they're great people, and I just, there were no words that I could find to come out of my mouth in that night. And the whole time I could kind of tell that they knew. And then the next day she texted me and she was like, you were so ripped, man. I have not seen you like you said no words. Devin had to speak for you. I was like, oh, he spoke for me? I didn't know that.
It's kind of my fear being in, like, public places when I'm too high. Because I just, sometimes I become uber self-conscious, yeah. And then I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's not a good thing. And therapy is such a beautiful, amazing thing in this world where it teaches you how to deal with your anxiety. And I just applied that to anxiety triggered highs. So if I do find myself getting into that, oh, I don't love this feeling moment, I just go, what is the one thing that is doable that will make me happy to refocus what I am doing? I'll deal with whatever that is after. And so you use it to kind of, you retrain your brain to go, ooh, I don't like what's happening right here. What's something I do like? And then just go do that.
Should you have an example, like a TV show, or like, does it have to be a specific thing? Or
literally
just...
anything. Like, my go-to is my cats.
Nice.
They're usually there anyways, and I'm like, oh man, I'm not feeling really good about myself for whatever reason, high or not. And I'm like, oh, this is fur baby, hello, thing that loves me, and I can take care of and just chill out with. Or food, work. Like, I get extremely high every day, all day, right? And I can actually work. Have the functioning high blessing to be able to do that. And if I go and, you know, we're in a meeting or I'm on my own and I've hit a couple too many dabs and I'm like, whoa, I'm really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot of shit to do. I'm like, yeah, but what one seems the most fun? Yeah. So then that's when I pick up my side project and I'm like, nice. I'm going to write this cool thing. Or, oh, I should hyper focus. That doesn't take a ton of work. We're doing photos today.
Nice.
And it's that kind.
But even then, the photos I find, like, and it comes down to, for me, whether I'm doing something that requires me to be doing something novel and new, or something that I've done before. And that is usually the distinction for me. If it's something new and novel, if I'm too high, it's not a good time for me to do that. But anything else, so like photos, used to be, when I was first taking them, that getting high would be a really bad idea because I haven't really done it before. So I'm like, okay, I need to set up the lights. I need the camera. I need to think about what lens I'm using. I need to make sure the freaking SD card's in there and all that stupid shit, which is easy to forget when you're just like learning to do it.
Yeah.
Getting high for that was not a good idea for me. But like now, like, yeah, I get some music going in my room and like, I don't have to think about those things because they've become sort of more muscle memory.
And you want to do things that you've kind of either trained your brain for or have muscle memory with. And that's why a lot of people I find like to smoke or have something cannabis related before they work out, because you can exhaust that anxiety really fucking quick.
Hell yeah.
And it is a really good thing to do. So I don't have a go-to thing that I do. It's literally, what do I want to do that's going to make me feel better than what I'm feeling right now? Because that cannot last long, not in my space.
Yeah.
So if it's dealing with it, cool. Yeah, maybe I'll meditate. Maybe if I'm like, ooh, that's a really deep, dark, twisty thought. We're going to take care of that right now. And so it honestly just depends on what I do. I have the same routine every day. If it happens in the same order, it's totally out of the fucking window.
Why don't you tell me for your routine? I'm curious. And I guess just we'll provide some context here for the listeners. You're a freelancer. And yes. I'm really interested because a lot of challenges around having no structure imposed by anyone else to your day, which for me, going into that kind of thing, it's the first time, and it's an intoxicating, it's powerful, it's empowering, but it can also be a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So talk me through. Oh, what's this?
You just press that little button.
Okay.
It's strong, though. Thanks for royalty, concentrates, you guys rock.
This button at the bottom? Or?
No, it's like a little flat one. It's
this one?
Right.
Oh, okay.
It'll be...
Oh, yeah, this yeah, one. Yeah. Okay, so it's like a key cocky or something.
Yeah. The Toki team. Team Toki for the win. My routine. So that's a huge thing. And I actually just worked on an article this week that was being about productive at home. People have seen, I'll pick up a camping chair and I'll throw it by the river brink. And if it's a warm enough day, I'll just sit there and do what I need to do. I have a hotspot. I have a notebook. I have an iPad. I can download whatever I need to do it outside. So if I go to the park or whatever, but I still kind of keep things as best as I can because ADHD tendencies are also a thing for me. And you really have to give yourself room to kind of not have a structure within
a structure.
Yeah. Which is super, again, ADHD of me. So what I did to start off is every day I give myself like my wake up time. And in my calendar, I have these massive blocks of time. Anything that fits relevantly into that time, I will do during that time. So I have my wake up time. That's definitely coffee. Depending on what I have planned for the day, it might also be a tea. But usually it's two coffees. I do a little bit of a stretch, skin routine, whatever. And usually I don't eat. But I definitely have my CBD in the morning because I won't have THC without CBD.
And would you take that in an oil form?
Usually an oil form, right, in my coffee. I have this great one-to-one orange flavored tincture, and it makes my coffee taste like a chocolate Christmas orange, those ones that you snack.
Ooh, that's
and that
a
nice just
treat.
Makes my soul happy.
I love those, by the way.
Yeah.
But I, you know, if I'm getting
becoming
one in,
chocolate bars.
I eat the whole orange. I have no self-control over
they
those.
They do other
orange
forms now.
I've seen the bars, but flavors. I love the wheel.
Yeah, you
and
really
the
want
the circle is just like boom.
Yeah.
It's just so satisfying.
After that, I usually have a work time, which is any general work. That could be searching for a new gig. It could be my meetings. Again, I kind of have a list of things that will qualify for that time in my calendar. After that is a project time. So I either dedicate it to the project that I'm doing on the DL, or any major projects that I'm doing, but it is project focused. That could also be my prime time, when the lighting is great in our kitchen, for doing videos. So if I'm going to cook, it's usually at that time as well. Then there's an open break for whatever I feel like. It's not scheduled, it's just blank. And then I have care time. At the end of my day, and then that is usually yoga, probably more cooking if I'm not already cooking, and around that 4:20 mark is when I'm really hungry. It's when I usually start eating in a day, depending on how early I wake up, and then that's usually also when I crack a beer. And then anything that happens after 5 o'clock is usually back on the computer doing anything that I didn't wrap up earlier in that day, or if I got distracted by something else, but give myself a little bit more room to work, and maybe do chores or putz around. But I do try and have periods of time that allow me to do the random crazy things that I enjoy.
And how long, like how many hours is your typical work day, would you say?
That's also another thing. If I don't have anything, I'm not going to sit myself down if I don't have to, or I'm going to only focus on the things that I personally want to do. Like I've been wanting to do this recipe or write this story or hop on a call with a friend. I would say it usually does add up to 8 hours now that I'm doing freelancing. But I mean, there are still days that I find myself in front of a computer for like 14 hours.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's relevant consulting or freelancing, or just my own stuff, is a different question.
And do you find, because for me personally, like I find when I wake up in the morning, I'm very focused, and it's almost like my best time probably for high intellectual intensity work. I'm usually just like drilling through emails or like that kind of stuff, which actually may be a waste of that window, who knows. Yeah. And then in the afternoon, I kind of like more of the creative things, but I'm, you know, not quite as sharp, you know, I'm more, yeah, creative.
I think it depends on the time that I get up, because usually when I'm having my coffee and putzing around and doing whatever I need to, I kind of go through, even before I wake up, I check my emails and all of my socials, whatever notifications have popped up, and go through that and then kind of take a break.
Nice.
Usually that's when I stretch or do something, or clean up because I left a mess of bag of chips or whatever the night before, and kind of get myself set up for the day. But I don't think that there's usually a time where I prefer to do stuff. It honestly depends on the task itself. Like if there's something really interesting, like if I'm going through a digital audit, I won't leave my computer probably for like 3-4 days.
Wow.
Because
that's crazy.
In my brain, and I want everything to kind of plug into it. And when you give yourself space to get distracted or to go and do something else or go, I'm stuck on this. I know I'm going to get more stuck if I just sit here and pressure myself to get through that block. It's that whole, the best ideas come in the shower.
Oh yeah, they do.
They can come through at other times of the day if you give yourself times to actively, productively procrastinate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's the same with meditation. It's like you have to take your mind off the issues to create the space off of your subconscious, things going on beneath the surface to come to fruition.
Yeah. And as long as you're able to give yourself that extra space, it really helps you calm down. Like even around my house now, I'm not as frantic. If I'm like, oh, I gotta clean, like, for what? Like, take your time through it. You don't have to be running from room to room, hitting into shit. I'm a lot less clumsy now that I've gone into freelancing because my brain doesn't have to function at such a high rate. And I was working EST times before. So meetings starting at 6 a.m. and then finishing around 2 o'clock. We had engineers that worked in Europe. So I would crash in the middle of the afternoon after 4:20 for a couple hours, wake up for a couple hours in the middle of the night, crash again, and did like a split sleeping schedule. And it worked for someone like me with the just mass amounts of whatever I want to do. And I do find myself, if I don't have obligated meetings to go to, I go back into that routine because it works for me really, really well. And as long as
hold that for, because we're just gonna have to take a quick break, reset the cameras.
That's fine.
But we will be back before you know it.
Okay, so we're back, and yeah, we were just talking about the freelancing and the structure of the day, and different elements of the day is like coincides with different strengths of working.
Yeah, and there's just one more thing that like I kind of wanted to plug in here, and it's another amazing book. And for people who don't want to waste time on the book, they can go and watch the TED Talk. It's this brilliant dude called Adam Grant. I can't remember the company, but remember when those like kids in some uni class put together glasses, and they were selling eyeglasses, like prescription glasses, on an e-commerce store, and it blew up, and this was like years ago. And no one expected them to make millions. Like, they took off immediately and investment went crazy over them. Their professor rejected investing in their company because he asked them all of these questions that you should know before you launch a company. And it was right before the deadline of their launch. And he didn't think that they had their shit together. Lo and behold, they went and fucking crushed it. And he came up with this really interesting theory called the originals. So for him, in simplicity, there's two kinds of people: procrastinators and overachievers. Well, what about the people in between? And his whole thing was, there's people who procrastinate but are able to boom out their work because they've given themselves the time to think about it and distract themselves from it, that when they come back to that project to finish and boom it out, they're able to because consciously or subconsciously they have continuously thought about how important it is and how they have to get it done, but they're not ready to do it yet. And so when it comes to crunch time, people are able to kind of just roll it out, because you've given that room for your brain to shut down in one area and have that, oh, light bulb in the shower moment.
Yeah, but I 100% like vibe with that as well.
All the time.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, yeah, that's my vibe, because university even, I had a schedule. I had the most organized planner out of anybody. Did I do it? No. Did I start when I said I was going to? No. What I would do is throw together a template of what I wanted it to be. And then as things kind of ventured on, or I would have a thought, oh, this would be a really good sentence, but I don't know where it's going to go. I just know that this is one of the things. And then just throw it in there. And then when it came to crunch time, we all had to sit down and pull our all-nighters and boom a, you know, 15,000 essay out in a week. It was easy because everything, I planned it out, but I had
to. You just had to execute.
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel that for sure. That's an interesting, and yeah, so Adam Grant, I definitely look into that. And it's quite a common thing, the example of these kids selling glasses. The couple of examples I always think of as J.K. Rowling with Harry Potter, to that book, to, like, I don't know the exact number of publishers, but it was a lot. Said no, 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 no. And then you get the one yes. And, you know, we all see the success and celebration and think it's unattainable without always seeing the long string of failures that, that inevitably lead up to the moment where it all turns around.
And it's coming at things like with a different perspective than you would, because over time things are going to change. And I hate the expression that was wasted time, because that's not a true thing, because it's whatever you've done and thought you wasted your time on, it's going to play out to lead to something else. So even if you do spend 10 hours watching Netflix or 15 hours a day on a job that you didn't think is going to be anything for you, you're going to find yourself looking back and going, oh, but it led me here, which is such a stupid thing to be like, life goes on and, you know, everything's worth it and it means something, but it does. And so relationships or friendships or whatever, like, it's not wasted time. Even if it isn't the best scenario, it's going to teach you something or lead to
something. I think we're too fixated oftentimes on, like, the end result or having success or having financial freedom or any of these kind of things. And I almost feel that part of that, by the way, is just the fact that a lot of us are struggling. Like, you know, it's a tough world out there, like house prices, like gas now, you know, wages are not what they used to be compared to inflation. Like, all of these factors are compounding. So, and I always fucking drone on about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So I don't know if you've seen this, like, triangle of, like, human needs, and right at the bottom is just, like, your very basic securities and having a roof over your head and shelter and basic needs. And so a lot of us, you know, when you're further down there, you can't, you're just thinking, like, day to day on the little things. And you're thinking you've, like, this far off thing of success without really understanding what it is or how you're going to achieve it. But by getting just into, like, the day-to-day and having maybe that comfort and space where you can say, look, I don't know where my finished product is going to be or necessarily what it looks like, but I have faith in this process and that, you know, it's just a journey. And like you say, these things, they may be seemingly inconsequential, but looking back and you think, wow, like, these things that I did were very important.
Yeah, and, like, the whole thing too is, like, when you're saying there's all these contributing factors and so many things, you know, can weigh you down, like, everybody's got a shit pile, and that whole, oh, someone's got it worse than you, well, yeah, no shit, like, I get that, but that's not to say that what I have weighing on me isn't fucking significant, because it is. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, but it is significant to me, and that's all that matters. But when you look at all those things and you start getting overwhelmed by housing prices or the wages or, you know, all of those complaints that could happen, even in cannabis industry, like compliance, like marketing restrictions, all that, look at it and go, why the fuck not do it a different way then? Mm-hmm. Why am I sitting here complaining? One, especially if you're not getting off your ass and doing something yourself. Like, stop complaining about compliance or anything in the market that you're not happy with. If you're not donating to an association, you're not volunteering for an association, you're not with an organization that's doing something to change those, because it's easily accessible. There's so many programs to change shit. Like, go. You're talking about, you know, legalization versus decriminalization. Go support Normal. Like, they're a massive group. Like, it's not that hard. And if you're able to apply that to everything else that you're doing, like, why? Okay, yeah, it's fucking shit, but why not still do something in that time that's gonna?
It's easy just to complain, and it's yeah. I don't know. Is it the society we're living in where, like, you know, you could just go say some things on social media and feel like you've made an impact, or, you know, update your profile picture to show something or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, it's easy. You don't really have to think about it too much. And it's something that makes you feel better about yourself.
Well, and, like, nobody thought that when Facebook started and you're on MSN, you know, in middle school or high school chatting with your friends or whatever, nobody thought that would lead to the fact that you can make millions a year dancing on an app. Nobody thought that. And not to, you know, bring that down, TikTok is actually fucking fantastic when it comes to a lot of different aspects of showing kind of where we lie. But that was from people going, why not see what happens? Like, roll the dice, who cares? And it's as simple as spending their couple hours a day to be able to eventually afford a secondary apartment to make into a content house, to make the things that you're trying to make. Like, that's wild. People never saw that happening. When people started looking at AI programming or graphic design, you had no freaking idea that you were going to be able to put that on a blockchain and sell an NFT and make hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. Like, nobody thought those things were going to come through. So that's literally from people going, eh, why not?
That is an incredible side and aspect to digital technologies and social media is, yeah, like, anyone can just go make something of themselves in a huge way.
People didn't want a centralized internet. Like, man, look at that TV show, Silicon Valley. Like, it's literally that. And they didn't even show half of the things that their AI program could have been used for in the medical world. Like, you, because they didn't look at that and go, why not?
Hmm.
Like, you just kind of have to look at it. And people didn't want one thing, didn't like how one thing was running, looked at Meta and Facebook and went, that's horrible, man. We should have our own. But now there's how many? So it's, again, just redirecting. I don't like the way that I'm feeling right now. Redirected to go, why not do something I like?
Yeah.
That's going to not make me feel that way.
You know, yeah, that's an important thing. Kind of like talking about Instagram or TikTok or whatever. You're kind of, part of it's you're seeing what the algorithm thinks you're going to want to watch to spend the most amount of time in the app, but then also you have some control over who you follow and who you don't follow and who you see and don't see. So yeah, I've been trying to get better at like just using it as a tool, and I like using Instagram. I love photography, I like sharing content, I like networking and learning from other people and interesting people on there, but there's definitely a side to it that can be prone to, you know, especially if I wake up in the morning and look at my feed, that's the most terrible thing I can do, because I feel like you're very open to influence when you've done, you're like, whoa, what's going on? I'm just like sleeping in another dimension. Like, okay, yeah. I'm just going to look at this feed of like curated stuff totally. That probably isn't real.
And we don't understand, a lot of people, especially people who don't understand tech or the age of digitalization or whatever you want to call it, they don't understand how we've been trained. And, you know, you see these trends that are like, addiction to social media and your phone should be in the DSM-5. But do you understand why? The business strategy that went into making this what it is and how reliant I am on it. When I got my Instagram shut down, it rocked me and I was so upset. And I realized it wasn't because of followers, because that's never, I don't care. Like, if I get to 10K, I'm not going to be a happy chick. That's not going to be a celebratory day for me. I was really sad that I had lost the descriptions, like the captions, all of my educational ones, because I spent a lot of time telling a story about myself or educating other people that made a difference. The second one was the connections that I had, because I used Instagram when we were traveling to get other people's accounts. So our international friends that we've made at hostels or whatever, I don't remember your handle. And those were the things that I was upset with. And that bugged me more than anything. I didn't care about,
it has a very real effect. And you know, when you're putting so much in a company and you're like trusting a company to be like, hey, I'm going to place my very real world human connections and entrust them over to you. I'm not going to do anything that's wrong in the way of violence or obscenity or anything like that. You're not doing anything controversial. Like, you're in a damn country where cannabis is fully legalized. you know, it's mind-boggling that they would see you as, I don't know what they see you as, but
well, and it's this whole thing again, that is it the algorithm, is it someone targeting? Because we've definitely seen our fair share of people targeting in the Instagram industry, and I know for a fact, and man, Instagram, I do have to applaud you on your policy for privacy, because there aren't apps or ways to investigate that anymore. We used to have that ability to go, who's messing with my shit? Because it gets to a point where you look at an industry or you look at that strategy, and it's just to keep on shooting people down or to make people attached to it. And it's not good when it comes from either way in our industry and everything. And it's just like, man, can we just get community back?
Yeah.
Because the fact that you're targeting other people doesn't mean that you are aligned with what cannabis actually stands for. I always say the stoner community and the cannabis community are two very different things, and people need to stop not being able to differentiate those things. That whole, I'm in it just for the weed and the high, and this is, I'm going to use recreational, that's not a great word, but they do it differently and they treat it differently. And, you know, I want to ask people who don't work in the cannabis industry but know about it or use cannabis and go, what do you know about the cannabis industry? From people who work in it, from what you've seen on the news, I'm really interested to hear what non-cannabis industry people have to say about that.
What do you think the answer would be?
I think one of the main ones would be it makes a lot of money. The industry itself makes a lot of money.
That's not wrong.
Health Canada. That's not cannabis industry. That's government.
Just been talking to Carol about, you know, the challenges around, if you haven't been into the store yet, into the weed store, but we'll go in this afternoon. They have really reasonable pricing, like really good pricing. And it's tough for it to be viable because, you know, they've got to come in line with the BC cannabis stores, the government sponsored.
And the taxes, man, like all of this revenue or they made this much in taxes, like that money is going back to the government. Like let's, again, help out our homies. Like let's focus on that kind of stuff. And that's when these kind of things mess you up, when you're restricted already in the industry that you work in and then you go to find, let's say, relief, not the best word, but relief on your phone. And people don't understand that your phone has done the same thing, is to train you to think that this is the way that it is and it's not going to change and I'm reliant on trying to improve or grow in whatever way in an environment that someone has set for me and not always in my best interest.
So what do you mean by that?
So if you're looking at the cannabis industry, the marketing thing. People are complaining about it. They're not going to do anything about it, but they're not understanding that it's not going to last a long time. So why not?
So what, like you're saying for Instagram, they won't allow any like paid ads or anything like that on there for cannabis on their platform.
Or even just what you're supposed to post or not, or what you can put on your label or not.
Yeah, it's very inconsistent.
Do what you can. Like
make it clear for people
why. Yeah, like put a little extra something in it that isn't going to break anything with Health Canada.
But I think it's just a can of worms for them. Like it's easier for them to just try and sweep this under the carpet and not engage properly with it. And you see it time and time again in politics. You know, there's a group of people that call out the government or say, hey, this is wrong. And instead of being like, okay, we'll debate you about this issue, they'll be like, well, you know, we've heard you're racist and or whatever. You know, they'll throw some misdirection. They'll try and discredit those people. You know, it's a very, like, it's a very established playbook.
Finding the direction going back to it. And so when it comes to things like Web 3 or going into cannabis restrictions, like things like Facebook or what we see as like a centralized space or our regulations in the cannabis industry, those things are going to be ever changing and people don't understand that. So in the time that we have in the middle of things, do stuff with what you're given, but do something different. Why not? Like, there's people who are being smart looking at, I'm going to use like cannabis again, that you can look at, okay, we can't market, but we can do whatever we want with an age gate and an educational disclosure and throw whatever we want on our website.
And then
why doesn't
anybody
have a website?
But in that way, you know, like, I think that the prohibition and the restrictions, they force an evolution within the industry. It's like that, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, and so that's why when you are looking at anything and looking at, like, digital stuff and cannabis stuff, like, it's just the way that you approach it with your thinking. And it's really powerful when you can notice those little intricacies that can connect things. And, you know, if you are super reliant on this or super reliant on how things are structured for you, take advantage of it. Cool. I'm gonna rock this shit no matter what.
It's a great attitude to have.
Like, what's the worst thing that's gonna happen? Like, I sent out my media kit to I don't know how many people. I got to a point where I was like, I'm just gonna cold call this shit. It's like, I'm gonna pick some people that I'm a huge fan of, because the worst thing that could happen is they don't answer. And I'm not gonna be hung up about that.
That's been tough for me. I've really had to, like, teach myself to accept criticism, or not necessarily criticism, more rejection, and be able to not take it personally and be not repelled to go back to that area again and think, I'm just gonna go do something else, I'm not good enough for this.
Well,
like, and there's probably a load of, go on.
No, like, I was just thinking earlier, before we even started, I was like, oh, I got this rejection email, like, don't even send me an email. And you were like, no, I wanna know. We're totally different in that, because if I didn't hear back, I'm not gonna think twice about it.
See, yeah, I definitely wanna know. If I'm hiring people, I'll let someone know regardless, because I just think that's a polite thing to do. You don't leave someone hanging, like, you know. And I understand, okay, if you have many, many candidates, but even then, you know, you can send a mass mail out, blind copying, like, it's very easy to do. So yeah, I've always been of the opinion, like, I want to hear whether I've got the job or not. And also, you know, if I haven't got the job, I want some real feedback. And okay, that's where if it's many, many people that I understand.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was probably over a dozen. I heard back from majority of them, and the ones that I didn't hear back from, there obviously are a couple that I did go out a second time and I was like, hey, haven't heard back, but because I want you, I want to work with you. Mm. And they are my priority. But the ones that I put in there were kind of like shits and giggles. Let's see what happened.
Nice.
Like,
so it's kind of like speculative, and you set your level of expectations. So
no, you just gotta have fun with it. And like, the worst that could happen is it doesn't. Okay. I can do more.
Yeah. I think I'm a bit of a perfectionist sometimes. And so if I create something and then there's problems with it, or, you know, it gets some bad feedback or it gets rejected, the initial tendency is just to kind of like walk away from it. And so I've had to teach myself to shift my perspective from an outcome to just a learning process. And that's helped immensely, you know, like, it's taken away my level of expectation.
But there was probably something before that made you think in that original process, and then as time went on, you wanted to switch it because of what you were experiencing in the moment.
Like, I'm only child, I'm a male, and therefore probably more likely to not be too scared to show vulnerability.
Yeah.
And have to, like, feel like I have to play all my emotions and be all like that. And, you know, over the last 5 years or so, I've completely switched, like, microdosing using mushrooms, other plant-based medicines, really just, like, clogged, like uncorked a thing in me, right? And yeah. let emotions to just pass through and be a lot more in tune with that. And this is part of, like, it's, that's had a whole plethora of yeah. impacts on my life. And I one of them is just examining these things. Yeah. Oh, actually, like, I'm very, like, yeah, I'm very sensitive to things. And that's just, I'm doing myself a disservice by doing that. And so just by changing from, like, I have an expectation that I want to achieve this, is like, that would be a cool thing to do, and, you know, I believe I'll get there at some point if I just enjoy the journey and just learning, like, day to day. And a big thing is, you know, you look like a stock market ticker, right? Yeah. And you look, you zoom all the way out to, like, a five-year view, and it's, like, this big upward curve, that's and you're, like,
really
sick.
Cool way of thinking about it.
And like, you go to, like, the one-day view, and it's, like, all over the place. Huge yeah. downs, huge ups. Oh, and, yeah, I'm thinking about it more in that kind of term. Day to day, I'm, like, what the fuck's even going on here?
That's a but great analogy for shrooms, man. Like, I took some earlier, and, like, it's just, it's a really good way of thinking about it. And I think people who do tend to lean into like the plants over pills life can at least understand this whole major development that you see in a lot of different ways when you start messing around with cannabis and shrooms and other plant-based substances. Not for me, those are too potent, I'm scared. But the microdosing life is fantastic. And it really does help you, like, when you say looking at your life, like, it's a stock market graph, most people are gonna go, oh yeah, because as life go on and your experiences and all of the things that you're doing and the stuff that you accumulate, and I know that that's not what you're talking about. It's looking back and going, no, it's up here. That's what I'm talking about when I'm going through this, is my awareness, my understanding of all of those things accumulating in my life. And that's trippy.
It is, yeah. But yeah, it gives you that, it does give you that awareness, that wider awareness where you just take yourself out of yourself a little bit. And yeah, like it's therapists can have exactly the same impact where, you know, like if you've been in therapy, they're not talking, they're listening, but they'll ask little probing questions. They're just opening, it's all in you.
Yeah.
And the answers are already in you. They're just there to help facilitate that. And that's what the plant-based medicine's doing in a whole bunch of, from like a high dose to like a very subtle microdose. When, yeah, serendipity is the word I like to use with these kind of things, because suddenly like, she's having these revelations and things. She's like, wow, this all fits together like a perfect puzzle piece, and I see it.
It does, and it's nice when those things kind of start to fall in place. And I'm so excited for things like the MAPS program for that exact reason, because I've never been, like, the hardest stuff that I've ever done is I tried Adderall once, and I did T3s in, like, grade 11. After that, I never touched a chemical substance, and I was like, I never want to. And then in university, I knew I wanted to try Adderall before an exam when we were cramming, just to see. That was the worst. Adderall did not work for me.
It's kind of like meth, isn't it? Like, essentially, yeah, it's pretty much
absolutely
meth.
Horrible. I took like the tiniest, like a quarter of a piece or something, but still I wanted to do everything but study. Still ended up doing okay on the test, but it was like, it felt horrible because it didn't feel like me, and I thought.
So how would you describe the feelings?
Like I literally would have done anything not to be in that library and study. I did everything in my power not to do what I was there to do.
What would you have done if you were able to just leave?
I tried sleeping under the table. Like, I straight up, like, I probably would have left to go exhaust myself and then sleep, because I was just done.
So it was like a kind of energy.
Yeah, I just didn't like it. Mm. And the same with the T3s. Like, I couldn't drive. I couldn't go to school because I was foggy and it felt weird. And I was like, this is not for me. But if the MAPS program worked out, and me and my homie therapist, because yes, therapy does rock people. if I was able to go and properly have an administration of LSDM or ketamine or whatever in a safe space with a professional, then I would be open to trying something. But going out and doing it, absolutely not. My brain does not need that extra stimulation. I will have a microdose and a lot of edibles, and I will be very happy.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and you can go down now in Vancouver and do a ketamine infusion. However, you need $5,000 to throw it at. So that's the
one in Toronto. It's $10,000.
This is the next problem: is the accessibility and it not being available to probably the people who need it most. But steps in the right direction, one thing at a time, right?
Yes, and when you look at things like MAPS programs, like to have a therapist office, like you could just like sub-doc and then just hang out here.
And you've got to train
and it could be the same
there.
As like when I go on a regular day, you know? Like it's cool like that, but being able to ingest is much better and just healthy for you all around.
Absolutely. Well, we're pretty much at our time, and I wanted to like talk to you about edibles today, so I guess that just means we're going to have another conversation at some point down the road.
You just got to come and we'll do this while cooking.
Exactly. That sounds good. Let's do it. But thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on and talking to you. And guys, check out Ali. We'll put in the show notes a link for freelance services. Highly recommended. Thank you. See you on the next one.
Thank you so much.